where spruces sing. My head is a troubled place sometimes, where ghosts and memories can inflict a lingering sting, and society's constant clamor and cruelty often cause my ears to ring. My eyes fail to find the horizon, and my tongue tastes and tells of unsavory things. The soul grows weary in these spells, craving longingly for its winter's relent to spring. I'll go to my places of solace and study the drooping boughs to which mosses cling, and with a quieter spirit, feel mother's love and hear the Sitka spruces sing. Comfort, if not closure, inevitably finds my mind, and merciful balance it will bring. Without fail, mother reveals and provides all I need, though in her timeless sapience, never everything. There you go.
Thank you so much for that. That was beautiful. And
thanks, man.
And thank you so much for this conversation. It was really heartening. You know, we're all going through it right now to one degree or another. And so hearing the perspective of someone like you who's really gone through it on a deeper level than I think a lot of us ever will. I really just appreciate that. I appreciate your work and the openness of your writing. So thank you so much for being with us on Coast Range Radio, Adam Sawyer.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was really an honor being here, and thanks for taking the time, and thank you for the work that you're doing and continue to do. It's been great.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is an independent production. If you like the show, please...
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. Our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive is here. Help us reach our $45,000 goal. Sign up to support us during this critical time for community media, now through September 20th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give. Text KBOO to the number 44321 or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and support Radical Radio together.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. Tonight we're going to be discussing Alyssa Rae Shoup and Detransitioners. So let's go around and introduce ourselves first. I'm Nicolette and I use they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma and I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Sheila and I use she, her pronouns.
Great. Hello, everyone. So first I'm going to explain who Alyssa Rae was and why she's important for tonight's episode. She was actually someone that we had interviewed on our show in the past. Back then, she was going by the name Jamie Shoup. So if we refer to her as Jamie at any point, that's because that's what we originally knew her as. But we're not trying to be disrespectful. So Alyssa Rae Shoup, formerly known as Jamie Shoup, was the first person in the U.S. to be legally recognized as non-binary in 2016. In 2019, Alyssa released a statement that she had returned to her male birth sex and intended to detransition. She also criticized gender-affirming surgery, claiming that it had high complication rates, and expressed opposition to trans people serving in the military. Alyssa published an essay about her detransition on the conservative news website, The Daily Signal, and her essay went viral among anti-trans groups and politicians who used it as an anecdote to promote conversion therapy. In 2022, she reclaimed her trans identity, legally changed her name from Jamie to Alyssa Rae, and condemned the anti-trans movement for exploiting her story to push conversion therapy. Sadly, on January 27th of this year, Alyssa committed suicide by jumping from the roof of the VA hospital wrapped in a trans pride flag. Alyssa's suicide note criticized the United States, transphobia, and racism. And even though she was a soldier, she refused a military burial. So let's start talking about Alyssa Rae and you know, how her story and the stories of other detransitioners are being used to push the anti-trans narrative. What do you both have to say?
So, okay, I'd like to say, first of all, I'd like to define what a detransitioner is. A detransitioner is someone who previously underwent medical or legal transition, but later decided to revert as their sex assigned at birth. The reasons for detransitioning vary. They can include personal identity shifts, medical complications, social pressures, or lack of adequate support during transition. Some detransitioners continue to identify as transgender or gender nonconforming, while others do not. The topic is complex and it's often politicized, but research suggests that detransition is very rare compared with the actual number of people who transition. And the other thing that I would like to say about this is that the topic of detransition is really complex. It intersects with a range of issues. One of the things that detransitioners often talk about is they say that there are irreversible medical changes from surgeries. Some detransitioners say that they have mental health challenges. And detransitioners will talk about inadequate medical support. In areas of social and political issues, detransitioners discuss feeling stigma from both sides. They can face rejection from the queer community, who sees them as tools of anti-trans narratives. That's part of what I think we'll be talking about tonight with Alyssa Rae Shoup. And they also are used as tools from conservative groups, who use them as political pawns, as the president is doing right now. So there's a lot more to say about detransitioners, but I want to make sure that Sheila gets to go next.
Thank you. The first thing I'd like to say is that this whole battle that's being waged on the airwaves and so suddenly important that it was even addressed in the State of the Union speech, and one of the very first points raised that the federal government was going to go back to recognizing only two genders. Well, here's what's interesting about that is that prior to the transgender movement is not something that is an ideology, number one. It's a medical condition. It's been recognized since Harry Benjamin's book came out in 1966, The Transsexual Phenomenon. It's been studied in universities. It's been studied by therapists and clinicians. And that is where the debate should go. So when you simply say that you're going to socially engineer by recognizing only two terms as being valid, that really, to try to think of any other area of life where you could say, we're going to make it a national policy to recognize only two different categories of people, which completely undercuts the reality of intersex conditions like Klinefelter syndrome, androgen sensitivity syndrome, Turner syndrome, and a variety of other things that have come up in people's lives. So the biggest question is, and it underlies all the tension that can come down to one individual who is caught in between in that narrative battle between these two radically opposed ways of looking at our lives, is what does that do to an individual when suddenly they are put in a position where they are the center post, they're the rope, and then there's a tug of war going, and the stretching is going literally to their one individual person. What kind of stress does that put on somebody? And what kind of stress does that put on our entire community?
Thank you. So I'd like to say that, I mean, I knew Alyssa Rae Shoup when she was known as Jamie Shoup. And we had her on Transpositive. It's been about 10 years. And you can go back through our archives and you can find the interview that we did with Jamie Shoup. I mean, I'd like to talk a little bit personally about Jamie. You know, Jamie had, Alyssa Rae, had a unique kind of genius. She had an amazing ability to utilize the media in order to get her narrative out. And she understood how the media works, and she understood how to tell a story. And she was very effective at it. And she was also very strategic. Alyssa Rae Shoup was the first Oregonian to get a non-binary designation on their driver's license. And so a non-binary designation means that on your driver's license, it doesn't say male or female. Maybe you can tell us how that works here in Oregon, you're in Washington. I'm sorry, I don't mean to call you out. If you feel like it, Nicolette, would you feel comfortable talking about how a non-binary designation works on a state ID in Washington State?
Yeah, thankfully in Washington it was very easy for me. I literally just went to the DMV and asked to have a new ID card with a different gender marker. And I asked for it to be changed to X, which means non-binary. And they did that with no questions asked, completely free. But, you know, it's probably going to be a lot more difficult than that in other states. And I don't know, you know, if I were to try and get like my passport changed or anything like that, you know, if that would be more difficult. But I was really lucky that just getting my ID changed in Washington was really easy.
And how did it feel for you, Nicolette, to be able to get a non-binary designation? What did that mean to you?
I mean, to me, it was very affirming of my gender. It was, you know, suddenly I have this legal document that states my gender, that states, you know, it used to say that I was female, and I always knew that that was wrong. And now finally, I'm legally recognized, at least in some form, as non-binary. And, you know, I definitely felt gender euphoria from that, is the term for it.
So as of March 2025, 24 U.S. states and the District of Columbia offer a non-binary or X gender marker option on driver's licenses and or birth certificates. So Jamie was, I mean, I think that we would probably call when she was known as Jamie. Jamie was what we might call a civil rights pioneer. I mean, she was the first. And so in a way, I mean, she's equivalent to the first in so many other areas of firsts. You know, I mean, the first person to desegregate a bus, the first person to enlist, you know, as a queer person openly, the first person to get legally gay married. You know, Alyssa was a first, and so she deserves that recognition for that amazing feat that she did and the courage that it took. Because even 10 years ago, and even in Oregon, being that visible was a dangerous thing to do. It still is dangerous today. It's even more dangerous now, and it was dangerous back then. I mean, to be so out and to be telling your story in such an open way, and to, you know, for, I mean, just for someone who is either transgender or non-binary to appear on the cover of a newspaper in a dress is a big deal. And to show up with your transgender body and to do something that's even a little bit more than that, and to say, well, no, you're trans. And maybe you can also help us understand this, Nicolette, because people may not quite understand, like, can somebody be transgender and non-binary at the same time?
Yes. So all transgender means is that you identify as a different gender than your assigned sex. So there's like transgender is an umbrella term, and there's different categories that fall under that. There's trans men, trans women, and then non-binary is also sort of an umbrella term, but that's basically just the third category for people who are trans but don't strictly identify as, you know, men or women. So many non-binary people do also identify as trans, myself included. There are some non-binary people who prefer not to identify as trans, and that is their choice. But, you know, technically speaking, they do meet the definition of transgender.
So another question people might have, and, you know, this is something that I think a lot of people wonder about with non-binary, is can you have a gender transition? Like, for instance, could you get gender-affirming care and still be non-binary? Is that something that you could do?
Yes. There are many ways to go about that. I know there are some non-binary people who, I mean, if we're talking about physical, like medical transition, some people will get top surgery, bottom surgery. Some people will go through HRT. Some people may even like present more like the opposite sex, but they still identify as non-binary. It just kind of depends on, you know, if they have any gender dysphoria, what, you know, their preferred presentation would look like for them, what makes them feel more comfortable and like themselves, what gives them gender euphoria. And it varies from person to person.
So Alyssa Rae Shoup was the first person to do this in a visible way on a state ID. And Alyssa Rae must have understood, I mean, I'm projecting a little bit now, but Alyssa Rae must have understood that having had a previous history as a transgender person and now also coming out as non-binary, that she was breaking new ground. I mean, she was doing something that was very courageous and that was also going to be new to a lot of people, that people had never heard of this before. They may not understand what it means. But Alyssa Rae had the courage at the time to say, this is who I am, and this is how I'm going to make my way in the world. And that's what she did. I'd like to just introduce really quick, we just have also been joined tonight by Jean Bryant. Jean also knew Jamie, also known as Alyssa Rae Shoup, when she passed away. Jean, welcome back to Transpositive.
Oh, thank you, Emma. Yes, and in fact, I was the one who kind of called attention to Jamie's passing. Jamie and I knew each other kind of incidentally through support group affiliations here in Portland. Back in the teens, and then we became kind of friends. We used to speak on the phone quite a bit until they became kind of a national issue. And at that time, Jamie, as I knew them, something happened. They became a national identified personality, and they had the nature of our conversations shifted substantially in the year and a half or so when that was all happening, and the attention was being paid to them. It kind of had like publicists or, you know, a bank of attorneys. You know, Jamie no longer spoke for Jamie at one point, and used to say on our, you know, phone conversations, "I can't talk to you, okay? I can't talk to you. I'm not supposed to talk to anybody." So, you know, that was my experience, and I would say that that takes us up to somewhere in the neighborhood of about, you know, I don't know, 2016, something like that, about the time that they kind of went dark in terms of whom they would speak to, even, because we used to talk on the phone, you know, like I had Jamie on my speed dial, for crying out loud. I think my takeaway from what I've read, hence, you know, about their life, is that they kind of got used. That's my takeaway, okay? They really got used. They got swept up into a public relations kind of thing, and got used. I think got pushed into some things that really didn't jive with exactly who they were or what they wanted to say. And in the end, when I think those interests kind of on the more conservative side of things, we're done with them. Jamie kind of in the end kind of went, you know, I'm not really sure that's how that should have gone. You know, and in the end, actually came to regret some of how their story and their lived experience was publicized. I'm not sure they had a lot of control over it. I'm not sure that they really even fully, totally agreed with some of the way that they were utilized, or their story was utilized towards the end. And in the end, I think it really did come home to roost, because one of Jamie's biggest complaints at the time was that the Veterans Administration, Jamie was, I think, a decorated, you know, veteran, fairly accomplished military service as an enlisted personnel, but, you know, high-level sergeant level. I think had pretty good security clearances and things like that, and was just incredibly frustrated with the lack of trans support in the VA. And these were the years where it was, you know, not kind of like don't ask, don't tell. And then the whole debate over whether trans people could serve or not serve, and all those things were going on at the same time as Jamie was, you know, coming out and trying to fight these battles on their own behalf and for others. And then I'll also say that And this is getting pretty personal, but I know that Jamie was quite dissatisfied with the trans healthcare that they were able to get, and that some of their physical experiences were not to their satisfaction. So it wasn't just the principle, it was the actuality of some of the treatments that were available to them and or that happened for them. They weren't happy with their outcomes. They faced a lot of challenges. They really did. And I think in the end, they just kind of went, you know, I really don't want to be the one. I don't think they ever set out to be the point of the spear, okay, for a non-binary existence. That was never my takeaway. It was never anything that I think was shared that I can recall in any of our personal conversations. That's what I can offer in this show. I knew them. I knew them more or less 10 years ago. Whatever happened in the meantime, I don't have any, you know, direct knowledge, but that's my firsthand. It's not secondhand information. This is firsthand. I knew Jamie.
Jean, or Sheila, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. Would you like to be the next person to speak on the show?
Yes, please. I'd like to talk a little bit about what's at stake as we try to define our lives, because that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people, not causes. And unfortunately, the way we are portrayed is as we are part of an ideology, and the ideology is held to include people that are not themselves transgender, but that are somehow a part of the phenomenon that will blur or obliterate the presumed binary distinction between the genders. So there's a science called semiology. Semiology deals with what are called signs. And if we think about it, almost all of our life consists of signs of various sorts. When you have a sign, you have what's called a signifier, and then you have a signified. And here's what's interesting. A signifier is somebody who sets forth something and says, this is the way it is. And the signified is the thing that is being labeled. So the question with non-binary is, does a person have a right to label themselves or to refuse all labeling, to say, you cannot see me first through a gender lens. You have to approach me without factoring my gender into how you approach me. And I see that as the basic idea behind being non-binary. It isn't in itself a designation. It's a refusal to be designated. And I think there's a good point to be made with that. So now we come up to the deep, deep question, why does our society feel that labeling is so essential? What interests of either the individual or society are furthered by designating people male and female and saying that there can be no middle ground between those two, nor can you choose one freely? You can't, let's say that someone was to say, am I black or am I white? What if they have mixed ancestry? Would they be forced to literally opt for one or the other? Or could they say, I'm simply not going to declare my race? That's not relevant to my life. But I see this incredible anxiety socially about the divisions between men and women. And my big question is, why is that so important? And why do we sacrifice people's lives when they're put in the position of having to decide, or decide if they apparently decide wrong? Why are they persecuted and are even murdered, as we see every year when we have our memorial service for transgender people?
One.
Yeah, I do hear what you're saying there. And I think, you know, what we did see, especially with like Alyssa's story, is transphobes, you know, the anti-trans movement, they will see like one person that regrets transitioning and prop them up and go, see, we shouldn't allow people to transition because they're going to regret it. When studies show that the rate of regret for transitioning is less than 1%. It is exceedingly rare. And yet the people will take one example and just assume that that's going to apply to everyone. If you transition, you're going to regret it. If you call yourself trans, you're going to regret it. And that's just not reality for the vast majority of us.
And here's an interesting thought. If somebody declares that they are non-binary, what they are actually saying is that they refuse to make the choice of saying, I'm going to opt into a binary world. It's actually not really in and of itself a statement. It's a refusal to make a statement. It's like being silent. If somebody said, are you going to testify? And you said, I'm simply going to keep my mouth closed. I'm not going to say anything. They can't affirm anything of you if you don't even speak. And essentially, that's how a non-binary should be construed. It should be construed as a refusal to be co-opted into making the choice of being male or female. And inadvertently, what that says, though, to the surrounding society, that says, but you must make that choice. And if you won't make it, society will make it for you. What's going on there is an exercise of power. So I see non-binary is a statement of regaining the power of the individual to say, I will not be categorized. I will not play into your game.
Yeah, that's great.
I can see where you're coming from there. As a non-binary person myself, you know, I am very strong in affirming, like, I do have a gender, but it's not male or female. And you can't push me into one of those two categories. You know, I may still assign a label to myself, but it doesn't have to be the same label someone else wants to put on me. That is for me to decide, not someone else.
Exactly.
Nicolette, I think that is very much my impression, my recollection of conversations that I had one-on-one with the person I knew as Jamie, you know, 10 plus years ago. And that, you know, at least at the time, they were struggling with exactly where on this, you know, spectrum, as opposed to the binary dichotomous key, they fell, and they had a personal pride that was something that they refused to, you know, give up, and that's what, you know, led them. So, you know, in terms of having found themselves in a circumstance, you know, that, you know, I think is noteworthy historically. You know, I don't think that they ever, in fact, I'm sure that they never really set out to make some sort of a political point with their identity. It was simply a matter of personal human integrity. And that's really where they were coming from at the time. So yeah, no, I guess that's exactly right on track.
I'd like to talk for a minute about how the current administration is using the narratives of detransitioners to support policies that are aimed at targeting the transgender community specifically. The Trump administration has utilized policies aimed at restricting gender-affirming care and limiting transgender rights. And they've used detransitioners such as Chloe Cole to publicly urge Congress to take action against medical practices facilitating gender transition. And they, you know, they describe it in really negative, hateful ways. They describe this as words that I'm not even going to use here on the radio, and that just aren't true. But I will use the language of the executive office with regard to the executive order number 14187, which is specifically a detransitioner fueled executive order. Executive order 14187, which was issued on January 20th by not my president Trump, is titled the Protecting Children from Chemical and Surgical Mutilation Act. And it characterizes gender-affirming care as harmful and mandates for a cessation of support for these practices. This, the language that is in this executive order specifically, as well as in other executive orders, was specifically fueled by detransitioner narratives. Unfortunately, Jamie was part of that community for about 3 years, was part of that community that was feeding the narratives of detransition. Now, Jamie had complicated reasons for engaging in these narratives. I mean, after I interviewed Jamie, the next experience I had with Jamie was actually listening to an interview with Jamie based on an article that had been published in the New York Times, which was basically a story where Jamie was talking about why they detransitioned. And Jamie's detransition was a little bit complicated. So Jamie first went from male to female and was transgender. And then Jamie went from transgender to non-binary. And then Jamie went from non-binary. This is my understanding. Jamie went from non-binary back to transgender female. And then Jamie went from transgender female to identifying as male for a short time. And during the time that Jamie was identifying as male, going back to identifying as male, was when I heard Jamie, and when I think Jamie was getting the most press as a detransitioner. And then Jamie went back to being transgender female. And I think that's where Jamie's identity kind of settled until she committed suicide.
Yes. That's my understanding as well, Emma. And, you know, their dissatisfaction and, you know, what is characterized as detransition had a lot to do with the healthcare system as much as it had to do with Jamie's identity. A lot of it had to do with frustrations with the healthcare system and dissatisfaction with how that system worked and the kinds of challenges that puts us through in making, you know, some of our healthcare decisions. Yeah, I mean it's very complicated. It's not really simple, but you know, I think the main takeaway that I would reinforce here is that it is not simple speculation. I know from personal conversations that the Jamie that I knew 10 years ago got swept up into a system that was controlling her and her narrative, or they and their narrative.
Right. I think that's really the take. I mean, among other, well, first of all, for me, the takeaway from the story is that Alyssa Rae Shoup was a human being, and that no matter what her gender identity was, that she was deserving of love and respect and dignity as a human being. And also that she was a groundbreaking pioneer who did something unique that they still deserve to be acknowledged for, which is the first person to get a non-binary designation. That's huge. That's historical. So, and also, at the end, Alyssa Ray still had something to say, even at the end, had something really important to say. And it's important to listen to what Alyssa Ray was saying. So that's for me, that's my most important takeaway.
Yeah.
But this is also a story. But the other story is the story that you're talking about, Jean, which is that there is a narrative that's being framed by the right, and it's in its full glory right now. It's like, it's the full glory of hatred, of this Nazi-like hatred of transgender people, which is fueled by these demagogues who apparently think that transgender people are, the equivalent of Jews in the 1930s, that there's something about us. And I can say this as a Jewish person. I mean, I own this. Okay, I'm owning this statement that transgender people are being treated as the despised minority. This is exactly what's happening to us right now. We're being treated as the despised minority. And we have that show about genocide that Nicolette helped us produce, that, we're running another version of that this year. And this is what's happening to us. We're being treated as a despised minority in order to fuel a political agenda. This political agenda is about breaking this country. It's about breaking the spirit of this country. It's about breaking the social safety net. It's about driving people into poverty. It's fueled by racism. It's fueled by fear. It's fueled by greed. And it's fueled by Christian nationalism. And we've been chosen as the scapegoat for the masthead for this movement of hatred. And people like Jamie Shoup were swept up in this during the planning stage, when these people were planning what they're doing right now. I mean, this is connected to how our electoral system has been manipulated by the right, and how they've used the tropes of racism and homophobia and immigrant bashing in order to ascend to political power. And as soon as they've gotten their political power, they're breaking the country. They're destroying healthcare programs. They just abolished the Department of Education. They're ending support for people in the developing world who were getting treatment for diseases. They're ending vaccinations, and children are starting to die of measles again. This is all just this craziness that comes from this hatred that's fundamentally rooted in Christian nationalism. And unfortunately, Jamie Shoup got swept up in this, in the same way that, anyone else who got swept up in this hate movement. I mean, in the end, I think Alyssa Ray Shoup was a pawn of the right wing, who was a convenient tool at the time to help draft their narrative.
Absolutely.
And she didn't deserve it. She didn't deserve what happened to her.
Absolutely. And I think the final statement, thank goodness, they made themselves. They made their final statement themselves. I don't know whether you shared the circumstances of their passing.
I did.
Yeah, thank you, Nicolette.
I shared, I don't have access to the full note itself, but I shared, basically the summary.
Yeah. I mean, that's a statement. That's a huge statement for this individual, because this individual spent a fair number of years of their life kind of in the spotlight and navigating through some of the manipulations and everything that we're talking about. And that in the end, obviously both rejected a lot of how they had been represented, over those years, and clearly had been abandoned and rejected by this whatever propaganda machine that had used them so brutally. So I think their final statement is the way that I will actually remember Jamie. That's really how I will remember them.
I don't have a second source to verify the note that Alyssa Rae left at the end of their life, but I mean, a couple of things I'll share from the note that I did read. One is that near the end of the note, according to the source that I dug up, Alyssa Rae said that you cannot erase non-binary and transgender people. That's one of the last things that, you know, allegedly Alyssa Rae said. And that's great, you know, that's a note of confidence. And it says that Alyssa Rae understood something fundamental, you know, that I think we all understand, that we cannot be erased.
I don't disagree with that, but you know, at all, you know, as an element of what they had to say. But I mean, the fact that they chose to end their, make their statement, you know, in a VA Veterans Administration facility, and as I understand it, wrapped in a trans flag. That's huge. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It is. Let's talk a little bit more about detransitioners and how we as a community can be supportive of all of our community. I mean, as we said earlier in the show, as I mentioned earlier in the show, some detransitioners still consider themselves transgender. And it might be confusing to ask, how could you detransition and still be transgender? Would anyone like to address that?
Yes. The answer to that is that one is the condition and the second is the treatment for the condition. You can know that you are transgender, but understanding the incredible pressures applied to transgender people, many people will say, I am not in a position for various reasons to live out a visibly transgender existence. And what visibly transgender existence can mean anything. It is not a function of how believable you are or how well you pass, because once you are outed by somebody, all of a sudden, whatever credibility you got on appearance alone can be immediately called into question by the fact that now your past is known. And that's why they continually go back to the idea of birth gender, or what were you assigned at birth? And they don't like the word assigned, because they would say assigned means that somehow society was making the judgment, as opposed to nature telling you what the actual fact was. But if you adopt this avenue that I've been exploring tonight, that everything in life is about signification, then all of this makes total sense, because signifying something is a way of designating what you will accept in another person. And so when the government says, we will not accept transgender existence, we will not even accept on our websites the T at the end of LGBT, we have scrubbed our websites to make not only transgender people disappear, but to the even reference to the phenomenon, we will make that disappear. And just to show you the universality of this, I've heard some talk lately that there has been I won't say exactly who said this, whether it was the president or not, but it was the idea that to designate anybody that commits an act of vandalism on a Tesla car as a domestic terrorist. Now, that's a way of taking vandalism, which is one designation, and branching it over to domestic terrorism, regardless of the degree of damage done. So there is an example of the universal power of signification. Another one is to designify law graduates from Georgetown University by the federal government announcing that they will not hire anybody that graduates from Georgetown Law School because they are perceived as having an LGBT-friendly diversity and inclusion program. And that is so contrary to their idea of what a society should have, that even to have that within a free university and a private university at that should disqualify you, regardless of your qualifications, from being hired. There's another designation. And this is going on all the time around us, and we should never lose sight of the power differential implicit in that.
And, you know, it's, I mean, there's several issues here. One is the real struggle of being a veteran. I mean, I don't think we've spent enough time on that. And being a transgender veteran. You all weren't here for the show we did about 6 weeks ago, but we interviewed Dee Fram and three other veterans who just published a new book called With Valor and Honor, the story of 47 transgender veterans. And Alyssa Ray was a veteran at a time when transgender people were either not legally allowed to serve or were barely tolerated as, you know, as service members. As you can see, they're still not tolerated by certain political interests within the Pentagon who would put their politics over the broader call to service that all military service members, follow when they choose to enlist. And that's a complicated identity that Alyssa Ray took on in her life. And, that's an important part of the story. And it's also just, I mean, it's important to acknowledge that her death affects a lot of people. And whenever any of us passes, whether it's somebody who, no matter how we identify, when one of us passes, it's a loss for all of us. I mean, this is why we gather on Transgender Day of Remembrance, because we want to honor those of us who have passed too soon. And Alyssa Ray passed too soon. I mean, so who would like to kind of help close us out, help us wind up our conversation today about Alyssa Ray Shoup?
The moral of the story, as I see it, is that transgender people are, number one, just people. There's no doubt that the transgender phenomenon exists. There's no doubt that it's not trivial. It affects all aspects of our lives. And that when it's encountered, it causes great stress to us without being drafted into some massive nationwide political narrative that wants to label us and either make us disappear or make us somehow embrace categories that feel alien to us and lie about it. That's the problem that I see. And so when whatever the outcome of that, whether it means lifelong frustration, confusion as an adolescent, or whether it means a person who has left this earth, perhaps as a victim of that very labeling upon us, this is a great tragedy, not just for us, but for the entire human community. And it's proving disastrous for the nation. This effort to label people and then eliminate them shows either a great societal anxiety or a great societal hatred or both. And we do not deserve to have that on our hands.
I think we need to recognize that the fact is that we have been both to our benefit and to our huge now detriment been spotlighted as a population, regardless of how you define us, right? Because any one of us as an individual is way more entitled to our integrity as a human being than to be grouped as a as some sort of a generic category, but my goodness, we're entitled to our human integrity. And that's what Jamie was about. That's entirely what Jamie was about. And Jamie was not ashamed to, you know, stand up and say, look, you know, as a veteran, I've been there, I've done that. I gave at the office, for crying out loud. You know, I have every possible right as a citizen and a human being in this country. And yet, you know, look at how you're treating me. That's the way that's how I'm feeling.
Yeah. Nicolette, do you have anything that you'd like to close with?
I mean, I largely want to end things off just being respectful to Alyssa Ray, making sure that we honor her and you know, wish her to rest in peace. But I also want to make it clear that, you know, Alyssa really struggled with people using her story as political propaganda when, you know, it wasn't even that she, you know, was transphobic. I mean, maybe she was for some time, but she detransitioned because, as Jean explained, she was dissatisfied with the medical system. And, you know, the anti-trans movement has no right to twist that to fit their narrative. And that's what they're trying to do with any sort of detransitioner they find. And it's just not right. And that's why we need to make it Alyssa's actual story clear, especially now in her death. She needs to be remembered for the real person that she was.
Thank you, Nicolette. Yes.
Thank you. Well, Alyssa Ray Shoup was a sergeant first class in the United States Army and the first person to legally transition to a non-binary identity in the United States. And my final thought is Alyssa Ray Shoup, I would like to say, may your memory be a blessing. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive. KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise. They call it climbing and I call it visibility. They call it coolness and I call it visibility. They call it way too rowdy. I call it finally free.
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. And help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.